Welcome, all you beautiful people. You beautiful people. Wait, I probably.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. They were like, Polly, you've got to find a way to start this show.
You fucked up immediately.
And you really got, like, right out the gate. I am literally gold ship, just standing in the stall, not running the race at all. I didn't even try. I did not get out of the gate there. Welcome to the Soxcast, episode 172, the most problematic podcast on the internet. We're here. We're queer. We're on a sphere. The skies are clear. My sinuses
There's
are
not
clear.
A beer.
I will have a beer. No, I will not have
I'm not
a
gonna
beer.
Have a beer because they have gluten in them. That's the only it's the only one.
Right.
Whiskey's fine because the alcohol is in the process of distilling it, the gluten gets like removed. Mm-hmm. Even though it's wheat based. A lot of people don't know that.
I like whiskey more because it gets me drunker too. I can drink way less. I can drink way less whiskey.
Also fucking tastes better.
It really does.
It does, right?
It really does.
I drank my one gluten-free beer I drank with my boss like 6 years ago, and then we were driving back from an on-site, and then I had to have him pull over at a rest stop so I could throw up. It made me so sick. My body was just not, it was just rejected this, because that's not what happens when I eat gluten.
No,
I was,
the other
I was
side.
Nauseous because of the beer.
Right, yeah. Yeah, beer took me a very long time to come to appreciate. And I didn't really start doing so until I got into IPAs. And then it was like, okay, now there's something here for me, because I can drink this one and it tastes like pumpkin and it's also 12% alcohol. That's great. Let's go. So I can take two of those to the dome and I'm literally laying on the floor the rest of the night. It's great.
Perfect.
Some might say I'm a bit of an alcoholic because I drink to get drunk. That's not a like I said, folks, most problematic podcast on the internet. That's how we do things here. To my immediate virtual right, dude, we can't go digging up his grandma. We'll get in trouble. It's Rhett.
What is that a reference to?
That is
completely off the dome. That was a Polly original.
Yeah, you go. No, there was a South Park episode it was one of the Halloween episodes. I think it was the episode with corn in it.
That sounds right.
From before issues came out, they dug up their grandma because they wanted to scare people with it. You know, when South Park was like kind of funny and actually good.
What kind of funny, yeah. In the 90s.
Like those first three or four seasons, I think, are generally still pretty funny and hold up. But then But now they're just literally like, everybody's stupid for caring about anything.
Like they set out making these episodes. Who can we offend this week on purpose?
Yeah.
Instead of just. I don't know. I haven't watched that show in a long time.
Like, I literally cannot think of the last most recent episode that I had seen. Like, I can't.
For me, it would basically be the game, the first game, is when I think I was already off the show at that point, but sure. I was like, I'll play the game. That was fine time.
Yeah, and then the Stick of Truth is legitimately good because I think that it still sticks to a lot of what made those early seasons of South Park work. I've actually considered like replaying Stick of Truth like in recent years. It's like, yeah, man, I actually really did have a good time with that.
Aw, awesome.
I like that you could get a permanent status effect that you actually literally have to go to Canada to get cured. It's really that's such a good RPG gag.
God.
Obsidian also just has it.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah, that was that Obsidian, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wasn't it like some other company that did the fractured
Obsidian
butthole?
Did not do the second one.
Yeah, because I remember watching the combat in that one, it just being like a really slow, like, tactics kind of thing, and it just didn't work. Whereas, like, Stick of Truth is this really fast, quick, kind of Mario RPG-ish, I guess. Man, I'm going
to... I mean, yeah, if you're going to make a South Park game, the one to look for reference is Mario RPG.
Yeah, yeah. Good game.
Of course, now everything's Mario RPG now.
Of course, you know, it's got some. They got parries everywhere and
dodges.
Parries and dodges. The worst part of any video game. Man, what is wrong What has happened to game journalism? And I'm not trying to say that from a shitty Gamergate point of view. It's just like, my God, dude, you got your ass beat in Claire Obscure. You don't have to like go on a complete diatribe about parries being bad in all game. I lost to one boss and now I'm so mad. I love it when you can tell, like, those pieces come from somebody that was playing one very specific game and one very specific boss or enemy made them mad.
We have to have a conversation about various games in the last 15 years. That is so much of social media is just like, I got mad at this one specific person, but... like having an actual confrontation would be like awkward. So I'm going to
subtweet them in this big elaborate way.
Just like a lot of the blue sky posts that like people get mad at are just like obviously someone getting mad at something specific. And then it explodes into like how we have to have a conversation about parries. We have to have a conversation about X.
We have to have a conversation about parries and how they're bad for accessibility in games. Like, good Lord, man, can we not discourse about something? Red, how are you doing? You've had a hell of a bad couple days. I hope you're ready for a show.
Yeah, totally ready.
This is a guy that was literally with his head down on his desk, and I said his name, and he perked up like a fucking dog.
Now, Polly, I know you religiously edit every bit of this podcast, but I think you should leave that in because it was funny.
Absolutely will.
I don't do it like with all our other ums and ahs. Not that you
painstakingly remove those. To my immediate virtual left, he can get down on his tardy knees and kiss the floor. It's John Thayer.
Hi there.
Hey.
I've been late a lot in my life, so that's an appropriate one.
Yeah. I like tardy knees. That's such a specific word to use.
Oh, tardy? Oh, tardy. That makes more sense. Yeah.
Tardy.
I heard tardy, and I was like, yeah, tracks.
No, there was a game somebody was playing on the Discord, and that was like a character's flavor text was, you can get down on your tarty knees and kiss the floor.
I mean, I can do that too.
Yeah, so, I mean,
dinner first.
That's very much a John thing, I think. I can see it. I see it. You're doing good though. You're here for a podcast. We're here to we're here to have us a good time. And seeing as that Rhett's feeling a little down, and John maybe John's in a bad place right now.
My poor kitty had all but two of her teeth taken out.
Your cat.
No, I know. I wasn't talking about when I accidentally kind of stepped a little bit on her paw right before the show. I meant just in general, she had a big dental procedure and she can only eat soft food for at least 2 weeks. And I'm just babying her. I just love her a lot.
I've never heard of a cat having their teeth removed. What's the next step?
All right. That happens all the fucking time.
Yeah,
because cat teeth are a disaster all the time.
Yep.
And generally they just work. They just go fine. Oftentimes, even with no teeth at all, they can still eat. At least according to what the vet told me, if they weren't fucking.
So there's no kitty dentures.
No, cats have a very strong bone on the top of their mouth and they will sometimes be able to eat dry kibble even without teeth, because they can just kind of press it up against that bone.
Oh my God.
Dude, my dad in the final years of his life said to hell with his dentures and literally ate with his gums, and I saw that man eat peanuts. Okay. So like, I don't know how people do that. I don't know whether that's just sheer strength of will of like, man, I'm just not giving up these peanuts. Not happening. I will suffer for these nuts.
Gonna really suck on those until they fall.
Really? Right. But I would he would literally bite them. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't watch this. I can't do this. I can't. Dad, you're insane. My dad was a beast, though. We're talking about a dude that was literally walking around the hospital an hour out of open heart surgery, okay? My Holy dad shit. Was kind of a boss.
Fuck yeah.
But anyway, pod podcast talk about stuff time. How about
what are
we
you mediating, Polly?
I'm gonna do that. I'll get us started. I am the grandmaster at the center stage to get things started, to set the tone, and I've done a fantastic, just bang up fucking job so far. So why not jump right into where we were when we last left off? When we last left off, I was playing the great big Atlas RPG Metaphor Refantasio. Bet you're wondering how that's going, aren't you?
Hell yeah. It's been actually. This one, because the fairy's cute.
The fairy, Gallica? Gallica's amazing. We love Gallica.
What about the redhead elf girl?
Oh, she's Hulken. Her name is Hulkenberg, and I think that is a fantastic name for an elf girl. Hulkenberg. It's a great name. It's a great name. But you should also look up Yuffa, though. Yuffa is very adorable. She's a fantastic character.
Yuffa.
E-U-P-H-A. Yeah, she's real good.
Wait for it. Wait for it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's E-U-P-A. Yeah, you just said that.
Yeah.
Yuffa Metaphor.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. There you go. She's cute. But yeah, so I remember when we were last together, I had talked about how that game kind of dry, kind of feels like, it feels like the dry turkey you get. And that was like 20 hours or so in. It kind of felt like, I don't know if this game's going to hold me. There are things that I am excited about that it's doing. I'm just not entirely sure yet if it's going to hold me because this is real dry fantasy.
A lot can happen in 3 weeks, I realize.
A lot can happen in 3 weeks. A lot can happen when you finish recording a podcast and then you open the video game and suddenly it's chock full of personality literally 10 minutes in. And literally, like, this could not have been any more perfect because when I load the game back up, I get back into doing things. I'm just like, all right, let's go do the next thing we gotta do. The very first thing that happens when I go back to playing is our party gets eaten by a gigantic sandworm.
Excellent. Classic.
Which is fantastic. That is classic. And we... a 15-minute timer pops up on the screen.
God, yes.
A door gets but it's really just, you know, esophagus gets closed behind us, and I get greeted with the greatest mission prompt I have ever seen in I've ever seen in a video game ever. Get out of the way, survive from Halo Reach. I get greeted with a mission prompt that pops up into the top of the screen. Get to the anus!
Exquisite.
I...
this is gaming.
I had to just stop for a moment because that completely caught me off guard. And everybody, like... before we get swallowed, everybody's making a joke about it. Like, everybody's like, oh man, I'd hate to see what happens if this thing ends up swallowing us. It'll be a real stinky situation, right, guys? Like, the party is making all of these dumb poop jokes about it before it happens. And then we get swallowed, and you've got 15 minutes to get to the anus. And it's like a fucking course. Right, I'm Polly. I'm who I am. The one thing that's gonna pull. The one thing. It's like the one thing that Metaphor is gonna do to throw its arm around my shoulders and pull me in. Like, come on, Polly, you're along for the ride. I've got a poop joke. Let's go. And you do get shit out of the gigantic sound. Bit like it is just a big disgusting like diarrhea sound when it happens. Like, you don't see it. It's just the screen goes dark and you hear the blah, 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 blah. You hear all of that and it's just like, sure, fucking all right, gaming. Metaphor, you did it.
Fucking gaming.
What are video games? So, and from this exact moment, this goddamn game finally had its personality. Like, the characters, like, they, like, it feels like an entirely different writing staff took over at this point or something. It makes me feel like they started this game and we're like, we really want to do this serious fantasy story where we're talking about like what's wrong with the world and these injustices and discrimination. And they're doing that for like the first fourth of the script. And they're looking at it and going, man, there's no levity here. Or maybe they got some feedback from somebody. Mm-hmm. It was like, there could be a little levity here. It's like, all right, man, what about Poop Worm? Let's go. And from that point, it's like the party's like interactions are a little more playful. Characters are more comfortable around one another. It just kind of like really opened up in a way that I wasn't expecting, but it was just so whiplash. Like, what the hell are we playing the same game?
I think when you've been like that through that with somebody, yeah, you're going to get closer.
Yeah, I think like
nothing could be weirder than that. Let's just ease up around each other.
Yeah, man, look, we have all been shit out by the same monster. Man, we are best of friends now. I made a new bat buddy. He's real good. Heisme, he's amazing. I think that this game's doing a hell of a bang up job with characters, though. And it's shocking because I think that like Persona suffers a lot because it always kind of feels like there are too many cooks in the kitchen writing. So the games often feel at odds with the themes that the main game is trying to do sometimes. Like Persona 5 has a couple real egregious ones where it's just like, what? This is not what this game is about at all. What are you doing? But I found that like the follower bond stuff in this game, it still feels kind of compartmentalized in that I don't think much of it really comes up in the main story. But I think that like Persona games are always about this like interpersonal relationship thing. Like that's the whole thing of like the bonds you make with people are your strength, right? So that's always front and center, whereas this game, like, the main thing that's happening is, like, we are trying to save this country. We're trying to keep tyranny and fascism from happening. And so that stuff feels okay being a little more compartmentalized, I suppose.
Cool. It sounds like it's hitting it okay. Good balance at this point now for you, where it's just like actually has a little more of that flavor from, because like, yeah. Persona 4 was fucking funny. I remember a lot of it was fucking funny.
The Persona games are legitimately funny when they're not being like weirdly homophobic.
Really bad. Yeah.
but yeah, like there is a genuine, like there's a reason people like those characters. There's a reason that people like, there is a huge amount of charm. And I think like the first 20 hours of this game are just really dry and you've got to work to get there, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm glad it's pulling you back in, even if it sounds like, is the RPG part still really easy?
I think that the RPG part has been really fun to engage with. I'm actually enjoying the archetype system quite a bit, in the level of customization. Because I hadn't really considered like how well that building could work, because you can really only pull in 4 inherited skills from other classes, but you can do those from any class. So you kind of get that Final Fantasy Tactics level of like, oh god, I could actually do some really crazy stuff here. Like I could like go against what is supposed to be this major boss encounter. I could just make 3 of my party members a mage and give them access to a synthesis skill that lets them melt it in one round. Okay. And I think that there's a satisfaction in being able to kind of puzzle those things out. Like when you are smart, because I'm playing on hard. And on hard, enemies get one more press turn every round. So if there are like 4 enemies, they get 5 turns. And if they hit a weakness, they get a half a turn back the same way you do. So things can still, you know, go really out of your favor.
Go south.
Yeah. Like, so I think that the combat in this game and the combat situations they set up, like there's some really meaty boss fights. There's a boss fight that I did during the last major story event that I just did that was just really satisfying because it put me on the back foot and having to adapt on the fly. But I did so without having to just exit out of the battle and reconfigure my team. I was like, all right, no, wait a minute. I have this person in reserve. I can pull them in, do this, throw up this counter, throw up this debuff.
Cool.
Oh, and it just, in that moment, it just felt so freaking cool. So I think that this game is doing a lot right with its combat, whereas I think like the one more system just feels way too easy in the Persona games, like where you could just literally give yourself infinite turns forever. You still get a shit ton of turns with the press turn system if you keep exploiting a weakness, but you will run out because you're only ever getting a half a turn back.
Yeah, it makes sense. It doesn't add up forever and ever.
Yeah. But I'm late into the game now. I've not completed it yet. I guess we could call it like maybe we could call it like the anus of the game.
You got to the end game side quest round. And you don't want to just mainline it?
Yeah, I'm in like, yeah, like this is like everything is like literally set up for the finale. The game has literally given me a date that says, right here, motherfucker. This is the end of everything. You've got a month. Go. So I'm at the point now where, like, I guess it feels like the game's giving you all of the opportunities you can to kind of, like, go back and hit all the side quests you want, do some leveling before the final dungeon, to work on bond events that maybe you didn't have a chance to. Because I do feel like you have less time in this game to do those things. And I feel like it is much harder in this game to max out everything unless you're really kind of planning things or you want to make things really hard on yourself, like trying to just like, oh, I want to finish the dungeon in one day. And I'm just like, I'm not that person. I don't want to play this game like that. I don't want to play this game perfectly because I just feel like playing a game this long and this big that way would just feel kind of boring and taxing, honestly. If you're just sitting there, you might as well just be reading a guide and playing it day by day, step by step, right? And I think that's
some people do that, just open a guide for these games.
It's so like,
why?
I mean, you just have to have the mindset that it's okay to miss out on stuff.
Exactly. That's fine. That's
how make it more fun to replay down the line. Like RPGs for decades have had thing like where you have to choose between two different kinds of content, and that's fine.
I think that's a thing that I notice that happens with a lot of people where they think that like they have to have everything in a game like the first time they play it. So like everybody's like jumping to play games on the hardest difficulty when you're maybe supposed to kind of work up to that. And then they complain about games being unfair and too hard or I can't get all the achievements in one playthrough. And like I feel like that kind of stuff is kind of like ruined the way people approach games, especially games like this where there are obvious benefits to being able to max out your bonds and stuff, but the game has a robust new game plus mode where you can just keep your stuff and then, you know, catch all that stuff up the next time.
I'm not dunking on friends here. I've seen this you know a lot, and I'm not a big fan of Final Fantasy IX, but this is one where it seems to come up a lot because that game has the bosses will have like rare items
that
have a low percentage for stealing.
I
heard people really complaining about how, oh god, this game is so tedious because every boss fight you just have to steal for like 20 minutes. And I'm like, I mean, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that.
I love
you
it because it's just like,
not.
Because it's also just like, you'll be able to buy that Mage Masher one town later.
Okay, and if it's stuff you can get later, then whatever. But if it's actual like unique rare items, that's kind of on the game.
There's also a unique rare item that you only get in Final Fantasy IX by playing up to Disc 4 in 11 hours in the in-game timer, which is very, very fast.
That is so hard to do unless you were a speedrunner. Yeah, that the Excalibur. I never did it because I think Final Fantasy IX is kind of boring.
But and that's another thing I've seen people get really mad about. It's like you can just not get it.
You could just not get it. Yeah, like I don't know what it is where everybody like it's okay to just miss out on content. Like maybe again, people play things differently and people get their joy in different ways. But like, but when I see people complain about those things, just like you sound like you're not having fun with the game. And when I think of game, I think most of the time I think that's a thing that I'm supposed to be having fun with.
The only way to get this one spear in Final Fantasy 12 is to not open these random chests. I'm just not going to get that because why would I think of that?
Yeah,
that's a weird secret. It's a weird secret.
I am not worried at any point in Metaphor that I am going to get to a point where it's like, oh shit, I didn't fucking max this one social link in April, so now I'm the game's now completely
is
unbeatable
stay
now.
Dead forever.
Yeah,
thanks to you, Polly.
Thanks to me. But the game's winding down. It's given me the date. It's like, here, go here on the final day and like wrap things up. But it's a month and it's like a book. Like, it's going to be a lot slower. Like, that's still probably like 10 or 15 hours of content for me to engage
with. Goddamn.
And cool. I don't want to, and I like, I realize like, I don't want to rush it. Like, I feel like if I tried to sit down and rush that, it would sour me on this game. And I don't want to sour on it because I really like what it's doing. Like, the biggest story beats that it's hit so far of just like, oh shit. Like, we've definitely hit the oh shit zone with this game and its story more than a few times. I've been gushing to Jetstorm about it, and he's been he's been very happy with my reactions to some things.
Good.
I want them to stick this landing. Like, it feels weird to still be at the point where it's like, I don't know that I love this game yet, but I am still having a really good time with it.
It sounds like it's not. Just whiffing it the way
It's not whiffing. There are characters Persona that I genuinely just love to death. Like, I love Stroll. I love Heisme. Yuffa is an absolutely beautiful little cinnamon roll. Maria, the cutest little cinnamon roll ever. Protect her little heart forever. There's just so
many. And the fairy, right?
And Gallica, of course. Gallica is still amazing. I'm still waiting for, I still think there's something with her that I don't know yet. I'm waiting for the game to be like, here's this last minute very cool thing about Gallica. Because why would she just be there, man? Why do I just have a fairy friend?
Gallica was the villain the whole time. Plot twist.
Yeah, I'd take it. I think I'd be pretty.
There's at least one RPG, I think, where the plot twist was that the fairies were evil.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think there's been evil fairies.
I haven't played it, but I've heard about it. And it sounds like it wasn't actually that cool, unfortunately.
Well, maybe Metaphor will be cooler than that. That's what I'm hoping for. That's what I'm hoping for.
Gallica Final Boss. I'm crossing my fingers.
Gallica Final Boss. All right. I'll let you know if that happens, John.
Okay.
I don't think it will, given the absurd amount of evil we're up against. I think the game does a real good job of making its villain just detestable. It's real good. I like this guy. He's got big 90s anime villain energy, and I think that when you do that right, it feels real good.
Yeah, I mean, they've done weirder stuff. Yeah, like gas station attendant.
Oh my god! Literally the best.
That is a wilder pull than the fairy that's been in your party.
You ain't wrong, man. Do the fucking gas station. I just like, you know what? Like, I had to give the game its propers for that, man. I didn't. I was. You right? I wasn't expecting that.
Life is good. Well, I'm glad it's treating it good, because I'm the opposite of you, where I fucking love fantasy. Mm-hmm. So if they just done like Persona 6, I would have been like,
then
because it's Persona but fantasy with fairies and dragons and sandworms
would be the one that gets Polly to be like,
yeah, right. Dude, but hey man, they did the sandworm poop joke at just the right time. What can I say?
Yep.
Other than that, I did a replay of Castlevania Aria of Sorrow.
Yeah, this was fun to watch.
I did this because Burst Error, who is one of my favorite like content guys on the internet, he does great work. He's been playing through all the Castlevania games, literally all of them, like 55 Castlevania games.
Oh my god.
Like even like the Java phone. This dude spent $300 on a Symphony of the Night LCD Tiger handheld machine. Okay,
like that's funny.
That's how dedicated he is to this. He did a play of Aria of Sorrow for the first time and had a great time. I was like, man, yeah, Aria is real good, isn't it? So that's kind of like what I did. I took my Ambernic with me all week last week and was just like, I just plowed through that, and it's just like, man, that's just kind of the
so
best.
Punchy.
It's the best Igavania. It's just, it's over and done in like 4 or 5 hours, and that's like with 99.9% of the castle explored.
Fuck yeah. My when I'm talking to, you know, cool friends, the argument in my head is like, Symphony has the prettiest castle in terms of, you know, just art design, in terms of making spaces that feel like kind of like that have kind of an arc to them. Like the stairs on like the left side of the castle that you're climbing up. That sticks in my head in a way that most of these games just slough off like so much slime. But the story is kind of nothing. It's cute. And then it's like 8 hours because there's a whole bullshit second castle that's really boring because it's really easy.
Always hated the second castle, man.
So for me, like, Aria doesn't have, you know, the the CD soundtrack of Symphony, and it's not as pretty. Mm-hmm. But it's snappy to play. Mm-hmm. It's over and done quickly.
It's got.
I like the story. I like the character.
The story is good. It's got a good little bit of difficulty behind it until you get Clown Solaeus, and then everything's everything. All right.
the Julius. Here's my big story thing. It's the one time you fight a Belmont where they're not being mind controlled. Yeah. They're not just like a doppelganger. There's a story reason where you're rooting for him and like him, but you also know why your character needs to fight him.
Yeah, it's cool. It's really good. Like I got there again. It was just like, yeah, this is just
Heart of Fire.
It's such a good hype little moment, and it's a good little boss fight that really tests mm-hmm. your reflexes, even if you are overpowered.
I really like that one. I'm glad you had a good time with it. I think of all of them, it's the one I feel like uncomplicated affection for.
Yeah, yeah. That is the one where it's just like, yeah, that is the one that has stuck with me the most, because I never liked Circle. It was just no. And I think
I don't like Circle.
Harmony is boring as sin.
I think Harmony's pretty. I get it. I think it has a more like striking look and soundtrack than Aria.
It definitely harkens more to the Symphony of the Night crowd, I think.
It's got the big neon colors that I really like, and I how the soundtrack uses the Game Boy soundtrack way more.
Yeah, it does. It does.
So I get that. But the game itself is really boring.
Yeah, it's piss boring, dude.
God, it's boring.
Yeah.
So I get those are kind of the three where I'm like, maybe I don't know about order.
I like order.
Maybe
that one has
some stuff to it.
But I may need to revisit that. Like my thoughts mm-hmm. may have changed, but I know I liked Order of Ecclesia at the time, and I think I liked it a lot because it was like, oh, this game just feels really freaking hard.
Yeah, I've not had teeth in it. What the hell?
I've not experienced, teeth in an Igavania in years, so
yeah. But I think Symphony, Harmony, I'm like, I get it. I don't really like it.
Yeah.
Get it. And then Aria is the one that I just think is good.
Yeah. Aria is really good.
Or Order, my deal is that I did do a replay and I just kind of stalled out and I didn't finish it during the final castle. So I was like, I don't know if that was, it just wasn't the right time or if the game just wasn't that interesting.
Yeah. Good stuff, though. Like, yeah, that was fun to just kind of like, here's a random thing I'm going to do. I'm probably going to do Parasite Eve now.
I got reminded. What a better chaser than Dawn of Sorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm never touching those DS games again. Those are real bad.
They're real bad. Remember when they just make the game, they completely change the art style from just the most beautiful thing you've ever seen to hideous?
It's hideous. Just so.
Just how to draw manga.
Yeah. Literally how to draw manga ass sprites.
Soma Cruz.
Oh, so bad.
Oh, God. I haven't played those games, but they did. Doing it with an established character is even more sinful. Yeah,
that's even more sinful.
Red Eye Soma is like the hottest thing in the universe. The hottest thing on some of the Mega Man Zero bosses.
Yeah.
And then like evil Soma in the DS games is just like,
it's about ethics and games journalism.
Let me pull that up because I made that joke years ago and I'm pretty like that's absolutely yes, there it is. All right, I'm gonna post this. I know this is
flies real well.
I know it doesn't fly well on an audio podcast. I just googled evil Soma Cruz Nintendo DS. This is oh wait, that's I just DM'd Rhett. This is how he looks on the DS version.
Oh my God.
It's so stupid.
He looks so bad. And then you look at him on the GBA list.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So, yeah. Like, there you go. About
tarty knees.
Tarty. These knees do be tarty.
Makes my knees tarty.
Mm-hmm. You've really got to emphasize that T, huh? Because you just sound like you're saying tardy. And you sound like you're either like shortening a bad word you shouldn't be saying, or you're saying somebody's late. And it's like, why are your knees late?
I'm saying he makes me want to get he makes my knees slutty because I want to get on my knee.
Yeah. Right on my knee.
It's not the case for Dawn of Sorrow so much.
Yeah. We're talking about wanting to go down on him, by the way.
Yes.
In case anybody was not getting that.
Like oral sex, yeah.
Like, I would still probably go more for Crimson King Adel. I'm not going to lie. Like,
I'm just saying, like, on of, no, I mean, of the I'm not just saying, no,
look, if we're here, and like Soma Cruz, like right there, you know what, man? You know, fucking let's go, dude. Let's just do this.
Yeah. God, Adol's hot in the new ones.
God, Crimson King, dude. Crimson King Adol is probably the thirstiest I've ever been for a male character.
Oh wow! I mean, I guess I can't go wow because I guess technically me too.
Yeah, like even Rhett, the straightest arrow on the planet, straightest arrow in this community, and Rhett's like, yeah,
fuck, I need to play E's 9. This is gonna be my next. It's gonna be my next. I keep thinking about Cold Steel, like maybe someday. Nah, you know, like, obviously it's gotta be E's 9.
It's gotta be E's 9.
There's hot Adol and a cowgirl. Like, yeah, what more can you? Well,
you can't go wrong here. All right.
There's a doll girl in Ease 9.
Yes, and there is.
She's like, someone mentioned and that's her. Number three. That's the third one I mentioned. That's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah, she's real good.
I played that whole game as the cat girl.
Yeah, she's real good too. I like White Cat. She's amazing. All right. I think I've overextended myself here a little bit.
That's fine.
But it's fun.
That's good. Oh, White Cat's real cute too.
Yeah, White Cat's really cute too. Like, look, Ease 9. I gotta give it to you. You knocked it out of the park with those character designs. Like, they're all just really good.
That one expression she has in that one bit of key art and just like melts.
Yeah.
All right.
Rhett.
Okay, so what we're gonna do is I'm gonna play every single Castlevania game and then make a 9-hour YouTube video where I'm wrong about every single one.
All right, Rhett, rapid fire. Best 16-bit Castlevania.
The one, X.
I like X. Man, X and Bloodlines are pretty good.
What's the one everyone loves that isn't good?
Yeah, 4 loves
Dracula. I guess 4.
Dracula X on SNES is the one that takes Rondo and kind of guts a little bit.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's also still kind of fun because it's
fun.
Okay, I guess you're right. The 4 is probably the one to say is the worst, but that's not as controversial.
That's true. I don't know. You should say Rondo of Blood. That would piss off everybody.
Yeah,
that's the worst one.
No, yeah, you should say Rondo of Blood is the worst one. That would make everybody mad.
Bloodlines.
No, most people don't care about Bloodlines, but I love Bloodlines.
The thing I'll give anybody criticism on Bloodline. All right, you know what? It's got a boss rush, and I hate boss rushes.
The stage, the climax is a little weak. We gotta give that to Bloodlines. Yeah, climax is.
You're gonna criticize Bloodlines. I'll give you that.
Most of the last bosses are just really easy, so it's just kind of like super.
It's hard to craft a list of bad Castlevania games that is offensive to everyone.
Yeah.
Especially when I haven't played like any of them. Yep. I've played Symphony.
Worst NES Castlevania?
3.
Okay. Acceptable.
I'm trying to think of which is the best one and then saying that.
Well, the best one's 1, obviously.
Oh, see, that offends John. Because you can't say the worst one is 2, because everyone will go, yes.
Okay. Exactly. You need to say, I think 1 or, I mean, obviously it's 1 or 3 is the one, but 1, if you, 1 would offend me the most, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Spit's probably done.
Yeah. I am, like Polly, I'm playing the same game I was last time.
All right.
I'm still chugging along on the 100 line Last Defense Academy.
Mm-hmm.
That one's, it's a big game.
That's it. Yeah, 100 endings.
So I was like 70, I don't know where I was last time. I was maybe like 50 days in, and I was like, hey, there haven't been any choices yet. I thought this game had 100 endings.
Oh my God.
So I am going to have to spoil some structural stuff.
Go for it.
I've already kind of learned some of it. So
mechanicals. Like, I won't spoil story stuff. So the premise of this game is you're a bunch of students kind of whisked away to this weird academy, and you have to defend it from invaders for 100 days. And the advertising is like, and there's 100 endings.
Mm-hmm.
And then you play the game, and there's no choices at all. There's one super early on, which is, are you going to fight? And I clicked no, and the game ended.
Well, that's an ending. There you go. 1 out of 100.
The Monokuma character said something like, don't you dare leave a negative review because the game was too short.
That's a very good bit.
Oh, that's real good. And
this does not count as an ending.
Oh, Dang it.
It just immediately brings you back to that choice. and you click yes.
That's fun.
And then you play 100 days in a row. No branches.
What does a day consist of? Is it like Persona where there's like afternoon or morning, afternoon, evening, night?
No, they're definitely not that long. It yada 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 is through a lot of it, but a day will either be a battle, like a full-on fight, or it'll be like going outside of the school to gather resources. Mm-hmm. And they have a whole like board game thing, kind of like the optional stuff in the later Danganronpa games.
Sure.
So like they've worked that kind of style into the main game, which is interesting. Or it'll be free time and like you get two events of like give a gift to somebody or just have a chat with social link stuff. So two of those will be one day.
Okay.
So it does move pretty quickly, but it doesn't move that quickly. Mm-hmm. I think the first 100 days does kind of sag in the middle where you're just once around day 40 to 60, I'd say it's like you're realizing that
we're doing 100 of these.
We're just doing this. We're doing the whole shebang. And, you know, I did really enjoy this arc. I think a part of it is that it tries to drive you crazy with the monotony. Mm-hmm. They've actually patched the game since to make certain animations skippable now.
Oh.
And there's one route that they may have well just removed because they let you skip it now.
Oh, which is weird.
I'll explain that a little bit later because I haven't gotten there yet. But like one of the things they do is like have a ding dong bing bong. Good morning, students.
Oh,
it's
no.
day 68.
Yeah.
Get out there and defend humanity. And they do that every single time. And they let you skip it a bit faster now.
That's good. That's good. That stuff could get insane. Imagine if they let you skip the between room walking in Virtue's Last Reward. That game would be 40%. That game would be 40% shorter.
One of the things about the first 100 days is that the characters will be like, at the start of most normal days, you go to the cafeteria first thing, and you can either manually walk there, or you can open the quick travel, page over, and go to the cafeteria. And later on, it just does it automatically. they lean into more being a visual novel. It's like, I'm going to go to the cafeteria. And then it just fucking automatically puts you in the cafeteria.
Just go there.
And it saves a lot of fucking time overall when you do that like 80 times in the first route. So basically, you play the 100 days and you get two choices towards the end. And they're also fake choices. And then the game ends and it doesn't have a perfect ending for the characters involved. And you're like, okay, it does go really hard at the end, though. Like,
good,
I think
prologue really needs a good act break.
It definitely made me want to know more. You get a ton of like lore teases, like you don't know anything. This isn't the truth you think you know, isn't the real truth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, boy, I really want to know what goes on here. And then there's a crazy tease right at the end that I still have absolutely no context for. But then so the game resets and it's like, OK, you're doing this again. But now we're going to enable choices. So you're going to use that information of what you've learned, what went wrong during these 100 days and see if you can do better. And the game is telling you very directly, try to pick what you think is the best choice. And I paused here for like a day to think about I know the premise of this is amazing.
Yeah, for real.
Like the fact that they wrote this really long, like 20 plus hour scenario and then wrote 100 variations of it to flesh out every possible choice that you can make down the line.
That rips. That's so cool.
It's such a cool premise. I'm not sure they fully delivered on it, though. So I start, you know, the new time, because the timeline doesn't even start until the second 100 days or so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like once you've reset the universe. And it just starts off right where the biggest choice possible could be made, which is on like day two. Like they even don't even
They don't even go through the first couple days again.
They just drop you in like instantly. This something needs to change right now. Like, this is the most critical thing to decide. Mm-hmm. So I try to pick the best thing I can. And then there's like within the first like 15 days, there's like four more choices. And I'm just like, this is branching like crazy. And then it's settles for a long time. And I think the save file even changes to say which route you're on now, because basically how it works is there's a ton of choices early on, and then you're on a specific route. So it's not that,
Shadow
it's
the not, Hedgehog kind of.
I guess I haven't played that.
Yeah, that's kind of that game.
Very Outrun.
Yeah.
Darius. There you go. Darius. You know that one.
But it's like Darius, but like once you've hit one of those seven final stages, then there's like 10 more stages afterwards each of those specific routes. So basically it's not real. I mean, there are technically 100 endings, but like basically there's a ton of choices early on. And then those endings will, those routes that you end up on will have like a couple choices right at the end to flesh out how many endings there are.
Okay. I see what we're doing then.
So I ended up on the, what is it called? The coming of age route. Mm-hmm. And I gotta be honest, it was pretty similar to the prologue route.
Oh no.
Things didn't exactly go much better this time.
Aw.
More characters died.
Oh, good. You don't want that to happen, I don't think.
No, I don't think you want that to happen. And I felt like the characters didn't really learn anything new. There's two choices right at the end. Maybe those are more important. But I stuck to my guns of doing what I thought was the best thing, which was, accepting one character's request, but then denying another's. Mm-hmm. There's a choice in the final battle. And it was like, hey, if you want to do the other one, you're going to have to redo this fight. And I'm just like, maybe later.
Hey, you got all the time in the world.
Apparently, you've got all the time in the world. So I went back and I looked at my choices. I was like, okay, which one do I change? So I picked a choice and I went down a whole other route. And I was, this one immediately starts throwing new information at me. I'm just like, oh, this is a thing, huh? So I'm really intrigued on where this one is going. And then I get another choice and I pick the option that I think was best, but also a little self-indulgent. And I end up on the romance route.
Oh, baby.
And it drops all the stuff that was being built up to in the other path. And I'm just like, oh, okay, we're doing the harem thing now for no real reason.
Excellent.
So I think I'm kind of starting to see where this goes, where it's like they're just trying to have a lot of fun with some of the directions the story goes in. So the romance route, again, didn't feel like a whole lot was learned towards the greater, like solving
mysteries. It's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny. You do get to spend some time with some of the, there's a lot of characters in this. I think that's one of the flaws is that there's maybe too many characters that have their one archetype gag and don't evolve a whole lot beyond that. So this was some time, you get some time to spend with the side characters that don't.
From the Danganronpa Zero Escape authors? That doesn't make sense.
No. Well, the thing about Danganronpa is that once a character dies, they don't come back.
Yeah,
that's true. So it's okay for some of them to be kind of one note.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're one note for two chapters and then, okay, we're not going to develop them. This is trying to have like 15 characters and develop them all. But also through 100 routes, they probably get there eventually.
Yep. Just by sheer force of will.
Yeah, like just by the sheer force of having 100 endings, everybody's going to get a moment, I guess.
Yeah. The endings of this one were funny because it's like you can pick one of three girls, or you can pick no one, or you can pick a fourth option, or you can pick, like, I like all three, but I don't want to choose yet. And apparently that's, like, the correct ending that leads to, like, day 100 is to, like, commit to harem but not fully commit. It's weird. I'm just like, they are having a lot of fun with this.
I'm committed to the harem. I love the idea, but I don't know that I can please three women at the same time.
Skill issue.
One, there's an ending variation that is like kiss a girl with the mask on or off. And those are both endings. So they're definitely padding out these 100 endings.
Sure, yeah. There's very minor variations going on.
Inexplicably, all the number endings are numbered. And I got like number 68 in this route. I don't think ending 69 is in this route, which makes zero sense to me. Yeah, like, fucking, what are you doing?
I can see them just throwing the endings a number, giving them all a random number, just so you can't try to figure it out that way. In the same way that Zero Time Dilemma is structured the way that it is, and that it's just fragments of the story every 90 minutes, and you don't know where you're at. I feel like maybe them kind of splaying the endings out like that is kind of a way to keep you from guessing, like, any kind of, you know, mechanics.
But the 69 joke.
Yeah, I just want a 69 joke.
Oh, okay.
I think this one displays out into, like, ending 65, 66, 67, 68.
Oh, okay.
I'm just like, where the fuck is 69?
Oh, that would have been perfect for this round. You're right.
Yeah. I just posted in our chat, but we got Emily. This is a thing people can look up. Emily Short wrote about storylets, story, and then LET, and it's a longstanding like interactive fiction structure method that I just wasn't familiar with, and it's just exactly how ZR Time works.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, I see. It's really cool to play to recognize like this long-standing convention is that's what they did in the third Zero Escape game. Cool.
Yeah, that's rad.
Have you ever seen the timeline or the flow chart for Slay the Princess?
Oh my god, that shit! I played that game. The flow chart for that game is nuts.
I feel like that one actually still tops whatever they're doing in
this game
in 100 Line.
I think it's like starting from a very basic structure and then dramatically branching out very aggressively is an underrepresented, delightful video game texture. Like I think back to like Stanley Parable or whatnot.
Oh, yeah, just, for sure.
That game's so good.
Exploring that whole flowchart is crazy.
So, yeah, I'm going to keep playing 100 Line. I'm not sure if I'm going to keep bringing it up every time on the podcast because
it's kind of like diminishing returns because it sounds like everything. Well, I got this ending and then this ending and this ending, where it's just like it feels like it may be better to kind of sum it up when you kind of get to a point where you can substantially know what it's doing.
Did the true end make you cry is the question.
The prologue ending made me cry like three times. So like can get there.
All right.
Like again, following that up with some routes that were not as interesting was a little rough. I definitely think there is good content here. It is spread really thin at times.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think the thing about the later routes is like if you've played a similar battle, they just let you skip it.
I think that's a smart idea. That's a smart idea.
Yeah. And then one of the routes is specifically about doing like 20 battles in a row.
Oh.
And the patch just lets you skip all of it now, which is.
Some people just don't want to bother with that in the same way that I know a lot of people didn't want to bother with the combat in 13 Sentinels.
It just seems like a weird cop out because apparently you have to do weird choices to get on that route to begin with. I don't actually know because I haven't seen this one yet. It's the one I kind of got spoiled on where it's like, getting on that route is a result of very poor choices is what somebody said. So I guess you see it eventually if you're just going for 100%, but I think if you're a normal human being, you might not see it normally. I think ending one is the one you're actually gunning for in the, you know, true ending thing.
Do you know what this game is like? You can't actually get the true ending unless you satisfy like seeing. You got to see 36, then 19, and then 23, and 69, and then you can do... Like, I'm wondering how the game determines if there's a true ending, or if there even is one, or if this game's... Like, the whole point of this game is that, like, oh, there's 100 endings, and you just decide which one you like the most or something, I guess, is what I'm scared of.
Do you want to know?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I do know. I did look a little into that.
I don't want to know, because I'm going to play this, too, so...
Okay, it's a big time commitment.
I know. And I'm not going to play it coming off of a big ass time commitment like Metaphor. I'll tell you that. Especially
seeing that Kotaka has another game coming out in a few months.
Yeah, like, he has another game coming out.
Man.
Yeah, he has.
And he's all DLC for this.
Yeah. Shooting Order looks really good. Like, I'm probably going to play that too. Man, it's just it's a real good time for weird as hell games right now, because we have No Sleep for Kaname Date coming out next month.
Yes. Also Zero Escape, or not Zero Escape, Somnium Files 3.
Yeah, like that's what that is. And then we got Shooting Order, which is coming out in September, and 100 Line. Like, it's a great year for really weird narrative focused games. I'm kind of excited.
Great year for like Zero's Japanese auteur devs to be continuing to make games in 2025, which rules.
Yeah, I'm happy. I could not be happier.
So in between taking long breaks of this game, I've been doing a lot of smaller things. Mm-hmm. So I will kind of rattle those off quickly just
sure,
to
sure.
I've been playing Kirby.
He's back!
What's the game called? Kirby Return to Dreamland Deluxe. I'm playing the Switch version.
Of course you are, but I want to hear about
very the, pretty. It's very pretty, and they.
I want to hear about the post game DLC because it sounds dope. So.
I haven't beaten the game yet, though. Is the problem? Mm. I'm on World 6.
World 5 boss is real good, huh?
World 5 boss definitely surprised me.
World 5 boss, like. I feel like it's one thing to have a cool final boss. Mm-hmm. I think the way to make a platformer or just like a game like this really sing is to have a climax that would be the final boss of a weaker game. Mm-hmm. Like
before the finale. I think if that was the final boss, it would be a very weak game, honestly. Yeah, like it was cool and it surprised me, but I'm like, this is not final boss territory.
No.
I'm not sure if they've done it before, but it did feel it had the energy of like Kirby waiting 20 years to have a boss that does a second life bar out of nowhere. Where I was just like, wait, what? What? You can do that? That's cheating. And it was a little, I was pretty low on health when it happened. I'm like, wait, what the fuck?
Fuck yes. Oh, God, I really like Kirby Return to Dreamland. I played it twice in a row. So,
oh my. Well, I think they make you play it twice in a row, apparently.
If you want to get the I played the oh my god. All right, continue.
So that's really fun. It definitely made me realize what they had to remove from 2D Kirby to make Forgotten Land work.
Mm-hmm.
And it does, I do kind of think Forgotten Land is much less tight, not as tight as an action game, because they had to take out the dash. Yeah. I mean, they didn't have to, but they did. The walk speed is not as fast as it should be. The move sets are abysmal in comparison to Return to Dreamland.
So good.
I have to look up almost the move set almost every time. I go, there's
so much
lot,
shit. There's too much
so
stuff.
Much more than you think there's going to be. They made stone useful.
Yep, the ninja, you do the Terry Bogard like power wave button input, and it has its own move.
What was that name? What did you say?
Bogard.
What's his name? What's his name, John?
Terry Bogard.
All right, yeah, Terry Bogard from the from the famous Fatal Fury series.
All right. Fine. Continue.
John, who's the famous actor Humphrey who? Bogart. Humphrey Bogart.
Oh, that new mic mouth noise.
Oh, John's doing the mic mouth noise. Okay, John's doing the mouth noise thing. That's always the escape the bit. That's our emergency escape the bit noise.
Okay, so I am used to Kirby Superstar. I'm the boomer who only played that one, basically. And as far as I know,
much closer to that than Forgotten Land, I bet.
Stone can do one thing, and that is turn into a stone. And now it can do an uppercut. You don't have to constantly stop and become invincible. I'm like, oh, this one's actually fun to use now.
Fuck yeah.
And yeah, some of the ninja one is kind of crazy with the shurikens and has a parry. I fucking screamed when I looked at the move list. It was like, press Y after blocking to counter the enemy. And I'm just like, fucking parry.
Of course.
Every game has a parry.
Every game.
Kirby is not safe. So yeah, that's a lot of fun. It feels really great to play. I've only done one of the challenge stages. I'm kind of just letting them all unlock and focusing on the main story for now.
I love challenge stages. I've had a lot of fun.
I've heard.
I got a B on the first one after my second attempt and went, oh, geez, these are serious. Uh-huh. You have to be pretty perfect.
I think it usually took me about 20 minutes each to get the gold medal.
That's more time than I'm willing to invest.
That's the best part of the game. You get to dig deep into all the character move sets.
I want the big final boss that makes me cry.
All right, well, keep playing then.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know where the story is going. It's a Kirby game. The story is pretty fucking light so far. I feel like they're building to something with how the stage 5 boss went.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Also, they redesigned DDD.
Yes, he's much less cute now.
Oh.
They did it in Forgotten Land, and I kind of thought the DDD looked fucked up in that one. But I was like, well, it's the first time I'm playing a Kirby game in 3D. That's just how he looks in 3D. Don't worry about it. And then I looked up comparisons from Dream Land on Switch and Wii, and he looks completely fucking different. Like, his beak is like a quarter the size now, and his eyes look angry. And people call him Club Penguin DDD now. And once you've heard that name, you cannot unsee it.
No, my God.
You know exactly what he looks like from that name. So hopefully next time there's a new Kirby game, they redesign him again, because this one ain't it.
Fucking stunning.
Especially when he's not a villain in this one.
Yeah.
He just looks angry.
One thing, Rhett, all the bosses have descriptions in the pause menu.
Oh, I should look that up. Yeah.
Yeah, there's lore and shit.
Lore.
It's crazy. I read a
lore is the funniest to me, because the games will start with like, Kirby dropped his strawberry.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, you're fighting like intergalactic cosmic deities.
Yeah.
The escalation is intense.
Like, they had a little bit of that in the games leading up to it. The Kumazaki games apparently just go all out on like, we're going to actually kind of throw in, they're like, they'll reference like this boss is using the magic that the boss in Superstar used or something. This like elements, just like real fan wank stuff, but it's all like cute and tucked off to the side. I think it's adorable.
Okay. Yeah. I think it almost feels like they saw the reaction to, is it Zero in 64?
Yes. Zero 2.
Zero is when they really leaned into that style of final boss, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Kumazaki apparently can do that in games that are also fun to
moving on from Kirby, I'm going to probably talk about that once I've actually finished it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We had Memorial Day weekend the other day. I binged an anime. I watched 2 seasons of Solo Leveling in 3 days.
Oh, the trash isekai goes down so smooth.
This boy literally just dove into the goddamn dumpster. This is not a swerve I expected.
I've been on with Rhett along several of these journeys. And it's always
this is by far not the worst of that style of show I've ever seen. Also, it's technically not an isekai. There's no death. There's no reincarnation. He just gets powers.
Gasp.
The extra funny part is that completely without me mentioning it at all on public is that Iffy also started watching it, and she's on season 2.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. My God. Everybody's in now. It won anime of the year. It won Crunchyroll's anime of the year. So now everybody's all up on.
I think I started watching it just before that happened, or I didn't hear about it until after I was already in it. I was like, it's a crowd pleaser. And season one is like set up and promise of cool shit happening later on, because everybody talked about it is like, oh, this is power fantasy wank, and then season one kind of isn't that. Mm-hmm. It's just guy who gets the ability to level up in the human world.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
wait, what?
That's totally different from what I was expecting.
Oh,
that's what's weird about it is that, I mean, yes, magic powers do exist in the human world now. Like, there is some fantasy isekai-ish elements happening here.
And he is going to be Kirito.
Yeah, basically. He's cool Kirito.
I'm pretty sure that's redundant there, Rhett.
About to say.
Pretty sure that's pretty redundant there, Rhett. Bet John's got something to say there.
He is just... the main character is extremely quiet and stoic at like literally all times. He barely talks. He monologues to himself. I don't like this phrase, but I think aura farming describes him pretty well. He'll just, I don't know. He just poses and does cool shit. And so the premise is that, you know, there's gates all over the world that do lead to like monsters, dungeons and stuff. Mm-hmm. And humans have also gained magical powers to fight them. But once you're assigned a rank based on your innate magical power, it's locked forever.
Oh.
And he starts as rank E, but he has the ability to level up and get stronger. But then he's still kind of weak for most of season one.
Cool.
Like, they don't immediately rush into the power fantasy. But season one ended in such a way where they basically looked at the audience and said, shit's about to pop off. And then, so I was like, well, I'm not stopping here, obviously. And I watched season two and it just pops off immediately the entire time.
Excellent.
Like, it really was like the Jujutsu Kaisen season two of, hey, we're just going to go and not stop for the entire season. Yeah, I had a good time watching it. It was very silly. I think one thing that made it really bingeable is that it doesn't get bogged down in like 6-episode arcs, like a lot of shonen do, of just doing like, here's one battle that's going to last a little too damn long. Mm-hmm. Like, the biggest arc in this is the last 3 episodes of season two, which is 3 episodes, and they just do Chimera Ant in 3 episodes.
Fucking hell.
It's literally an ant army. And then the Ant King, and he looks exactly like you expect if you've seen Hunter x Hunter.
That's so funny.
And they just fucking blitz through it real quickly.
Remember the one episode of the Chimera Ant arc? One guy is in an underground, like a couple of rooms, and another person is controlling doors to try to close him in.
Yeah.
And it's a whole fucking episode. And it feels like 11 pages of manga spread into a whole episode.
The pacing in that arc is egregiously slow. I still love it to bits.
I loved it. I'm just, yeah. That one bit's very funny.
So I get what you mean. The narrator stuff may have been pushing it a bit, but and stuff like that, where it's like one scene dragged out for a whole episode. That was like egregious shonen pacing. This is like egregiously fast shonen pacing.
Yeah. It sounds like the Jujutsu Kaisen comparison probably isn't too far off.
Yeah, especially because basically both season twos end the story halfway.
Boy, I was completely talking out of my ass there. I only know it. I've heard you about that one.
I will say Solo Leveling season two felt like it basically could have been the series finale, because the ant arc is teased in episode one of season one and they don't pay it off until the end of season two. And I was like, oh, you paid off something that you set up at the very start. Good job. Like, there's a few teases to what's going to happen next, but also the power escalation gets so insane that I'm like, oh, the series is just over now. This is the end. Obviously, You lift this villain from another shonen. That's the final boss. Like, the strongest Hunter x Hunter character.
So funny.
Real quick, one other thing. I watched Andor.
How was it?
I loved it.
Yeah!
I really didn't like episode one. I almost dropped it right there. Season one, episode one is the slowest shit I've ever seen. And I think... the idea of mature Star Wars had not fucking clicked at that point. And I think by the end of the show, you just stop forgetting that it's Star Wars. Like, the tonal shift, and just kind of feel like, oh, it's not Andor that's weird. It's that the entire series should switch to match this tone.
All right. This is very funny because we just talked about Hunter x Hunter. I looked up this old post I made and I said, my Nen power allows me to continue not watching Andor, no matter how many coworkers, web friends and family members tell me I have to watch it. And then I followed it up with, my 10 turns dark red as the replies pour in and I break away against my roiling aura. So that's a hard joke.
I wouldn't necessarily call it an absolute must watch. I just thought that the back half of season two, fucking insanely good.
Like I trust that.
Extremely sure. Like tense. It's like it's not even an action thing. It's like much more of a spy show. Like it's the rebellion before the rebellion has any power to do like real change. Mm-hmm. So there's like episodes entirely about wiretapping being discovered, or like secrecy documents, or like documents being stolen, insider guys like trying to not be compromised, backstabbing and murder. It's just, it's extremely tense though.
Cool.
I watched Rogue One immediately afterwards, and the tonal shift is fucking dire.
I didn't like Rogue One. That was part of me not
I
really.
I still don't really like Rogue One.
All right, cool. That makes me feel better about Andor.
I think Andor as a character doesn't really make much of an impression in Rogue One. Like, I didn't even remember who that was when I heard about this show.
Andor's a character? I thought it was like a planet.
I thought it was a place.
I know. It sounds like Endor. Endor is the moon of Endor is where, like,
yeah, where all the Ewoks live. Six.
Yeah. Andor is a character who's kind of like a Han Solo rogue type who works for the rebellion in Rogue One.
That's but so he, fucking funny.
He doesn't make. I know. I also actually thought it was the planet at first. There's a lot of like names that are similar to Star Wars names that I think they could have cleaned up a bit. There's a girl with brown hair named Clea.
Oh, get the fuck out. Go home. So go home.
Also, the one thing I noticed going from Andor to Rogue One is like, oh, I can hear the dialogue now.
Right.
Like, I think Andor does have the pretty bad issue of dialogue not being loud enough, being muttered a bit. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, oh, he said her name is Leia. Like, I misheard it.
Leia. Oh, I just got that.
Yeah, I go, oh, that's younger Leia. Cool. It's connected. It's not Leia. It's Clea. It's a totally different character.
Fuck, that's funny. So Rogue One was directed by Gareth Edwards, who made a Godzilla movie I hate. And then he made a Star Wars movie I hate.
Which one is that?
Rogue One.
Oh, Rogue One.
And then Andor is created by Tony Gilroy, who apparently wrote the screenplays for the Bourne trilogy.
Oh, okay. That certainly makes more sense for this being a spy thing.
Yeah. And then multiple like legal thrillers. Like, so that's okay. Really, that's a really out there pull for Star Wars. And it sounds like it broke good for them.
I think he worked on Rogue One. Like that movie, I definitely know went through like reshoots and cleanup, because I think the first version was even worse.
He was a writer on Rogue One. I should have given. Yeah. You worked on that. All right.
But I'm not sure how they salvaged what they could from it, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing going from Andor to Rogue One is like you can tell that Rogue One definitely tries to sound like Star Wars, like the music much more bombastic all of a sudden. The thing about Andor, the biggest flaw with Andor is that it ends like 5 minutes before Rogue One starts. That's like so, it is a prequel ending where they basically go, hey, the last episode is Rogue One. Also, the tonal shift is rough.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you, I cried at the end of Rogue One this time.
they made Rogue One.
They added a fucking shitload of emotional weight to it by having this other character developed for 2 seasons worth of episodes.
That's crazy. That's so cool.
And like seeing the journey of how this all came together. There's one part in that doesn't work in either series. Mm-hmm. That this one character that gets built up for like most of Andor doesn't really even have any payoff in Rogue One, where it's just like, oh, okay, he kind of does nothing in both series. That's a pain in the ass. Funny. Yeah, I had a good time. I agreed with one guy who was just like, okay, I'm just Star Wars ends here for me. Until people are like genuinely, this is the best thing they've ever done again, which probably won't happen for a while.
Yeah. My last one was Coder 2, which is also the, hey, what if Star Wars was complex and dealt with like the moral grays between Jedi and Sith, and it did all these complex things, and then it absolutely did all of that, and then I just ended it feeling kind of sad. And I was like, all right. maybe I don't need complicated Star Wars for a bit.
I will say the thing about this one is that it is all about dealing with fascism taking over, which it's you may right want to watch right now, or maybe extremely relevant right now. Season one felt so current and relevant, even though it was made 3 years ago, which feels like a lifetime ago now. Like, oh, wow, 2022. And you were talking about people being falsely convicted by a fascist government and sent to prison to work till they die. They read the room there, huh? Yeah, it's definitely an uncomfortable watch at times. But I enjoyed it. That's everything. Sorry that took so long.
Can I have a 2-minute break? I just want to pee and get some water.
Nope.
No.
I'm just going to piss right here in my trash can. Just like my brothers did as a kid and made mom mad.
It's good podcast content. So just do it.
Yeah.
Let it roll.
My bathroom's right there. It's actually taking more time.
This is taking longer than doing the pee.
I'll be right back. Hi, I'm here. All right. Wait, no, let me start.
Blah, blah, blah. The beautiful people. Oh, no, wait. No, not bad.
Again.
Damn it.
Hey, our community makes games.
Really? I hadn't noticed, actually. I don't pay much attention.
Last Sim on Earth on Itch made another cute little Itch game.
Yeah.
They made an Itch game for Slime Jam. No, it's for Worm Jam last year. And that was their first game after wanting to make them for a long time.
Yeah.
So it seems like Bitsy's agreeing with them after kind of stalling with a number of different tools. Mm-hmm. So I like those great work, Zim. And just in general, take a look at Bitsy. I think it's a really nice tool.
Mm-hmm. Make cute little stories out of it. It's really fun.
Exactly. Tom, friend of the pod, released a new hour to 2 hour platformer.
Yeah, just casually cranking those out.
It's just made another one.
Here you go.
Tom released one in November last year.
And it's literally not even a year. Dude, stop making the rest of us look bad. Okay? Fucking stop.
This is The Perils of Princess Christina, subtitled A Chorus Guiden. It's magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
He made an ad that made it look like a flash, like "Save me, my lord!" flash game.
Yeah, it's real good. I love that.
This is maybe my favorite Tom game. Mm-hmm. I really, really like this one. It's another 18 plus platformer with bad ends. Mm-hmm. You can play it with 18 plus turned off, and there's like other. They replace it with like cute text game overs instead. So there's a streamer mode, don't fret. But like the big thing with Chorus 2, which was last November, the Berserker Knight and the Dragon Lord's Treasure Hoard, I really liked it. It's very big. It's a very big world to explore without a map.
Mm-hmm.
And I love exploring like Metroid-y games without maps. Like I love holding that stuff in my head. Or writing it out on paper. But it just got a little overwhelming. And then on top of that, there's a hard mode. There is a true end condition where you find like specific doodads in the world. And there's two whole character routes where you tackle everything in a different order, different abilities. It is a gargantuan epic game. And I was very impressed by it. Perils of Princess Christina is like a tight 90 minutes. It's like a tight 90 minutes to 2 hours. It's got like several stages, basically. It's more in a line. And besides that, it kind of has all of the same strengths as Tom normally has here, mm-hmm. where the art is so cute. The little character sprites are so adorable.
Yeah. He always does really great sprites. They're really good.
The sprites are so good. The parallax backgrounds, like, I don't know, something about Tom's like parallax pixel backgrounds just hit me real nice every single time.
Mm-hmm.
And the action's just snappy and fun. Just feels good the way the Chorus games do. But it's in a very punchy package that's maybe more in line with like the first Chorus. So this just hit me exactly right, because I like little games. I was able to just played through it, got every game over. And it's just a cute, nice time. It's a classic little RPG journey, the way that Tom's really good at making. But in the context of a completely custom platformer action thing. So cool. I was very pleased. And then on the other end of the spectrum, from least corporate to most terrifying, I'm 10 hours in, 10, 11 hours into X Astris.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on like a mailing list. I don't know when I signed up for it, for mobile games that are cool. And the person like cool mobile games, okay, from.
I was like, that sounds very not like what you want to be on today.
Well, it used to be that the App Store was a legitimately creatively exciting place for new, like, indie games. Jetpack and art.
Joyride, let's go.
Oh, you know, it's not just the like big, like those that like the Endless Runners that got really big. There's a ton of, oh, I have, I like know. 50 on my,
I've got Monument Valley on my phone.
That one's cute. There's a ton of them. Terry Kavanagh's stuff, like, yeah.
Cannibal.
Cannibal's a great one. If I sat here, all of Michael Bro's stuff. Yeah. If I sat here, I could list as many mobile games that I loved on the App Store as I could NES games. Like, I played a ton of iPhone games. But yeah, I've kind of fallen off that form because it's the, I don't know, the incentives of the App Store seem to have fallen out of line with incentivizing the creation of the kinds of games I like.
Sure.
So X Astris is a $10 RPG. It's about 15 hours long. So I'm a ways in. I'm about to get to the last act, I think.
Mm.
And it's by Griffline, the creators of Arknights.
Arknights, right. Yes.
This is a gacha game dev, mm-hmm. making a good game.
So there's no like in-app bullshit.
None. It's just an RPG. It's a modern RPG. So what that means is there's waypoints at the top of your screen. There's no mini map, but it does just like have, you know, that Fallout radar that's pointing at where your next goal is at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of systems that it drops on you up front. And that's part of why I tried this when it came out last year, kind of for the novelty. Cause I was like, why? I have so many friends that play Arknights. Why have I not seen a thing about this game? I was like almost a little bit spiteful and salty. Like y'all only care about these things because of the fucking gambling.
I mean, that really feels more and more true.
I mean, people really do be just kind of bragging. I mean, I will see so many people go live with the stream. It's just like, I'm about to waste $100. Let's go. And it's like, what? Why are you happy about that? Right?
So my arc with gacha stuff is that I played Dragalia Lost when it came out, and I thought the action was really. And then I got to the end of the story content and it hadn't even come close to ending. And I was like, what? But I played what? I didn't know what a gacha game was. So I was just befuddled and really disappointed. And then I played Faco for like 60 hours and the first 50 hours of it was really bad. But then I got to the Nasu content like that they dole out ages in. I got to Camelot and then it was actually really good. And I haven't gotten back to it. I got so exhausted from the bad parts that even though I'm in the good stuff now, I haven't gone back to it. And I played a little bit of Honkai Impact 3rd, and I thought the action felt really bad and the pacing was really bad. And there were like three times as many systems as Fate Go. And Fate Go was already monstrously overwhelming to me. I was repulsed by Honkai Impact 3rd.
Yeah, that just seems like so much.
Yeah. Music's a lot of good music, which is what pulled me in.
Sure.
I didn't get to any of it.
I bet you didn't.
Fate Go is badly paced. Honkai Impact 3rd felt like a bad licensed game from the Zeros with how bad the pacing was. where like you get to the dungeon and then the dungeon goes four times longer than there's any reason it should.
Yeah.
It's a texture I specifically associate with like old Game Boy Advance Harry Potter games.
Oh,
it's
God, bad. Yeah.
That's Honkai is the one that tries to play like DMC, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, well, maybe it gets there. It certainly didn't feel good up front.
Because I think something that's trying to be an action game feeling bad is probably worse than something that's just pure numbers crashing against each other.
Yes, Faco, I ultimately started liking. It's just crunchy math puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
Once it starts having hard bosses, and I built the kind of party I needed to have to stand up to that, and I kind of started actually engaging with the game, I started enjoying the fighting. So X Astris, again, I haven't played Arc Knights, I haven't played any games from Griffline. This is my first single player Chinese RPG I'm seeing through, which feels cool. I played some Korean RPGs some time ago, and I like getting a wider spread of what's coming out of different ecosystems around the world. So that is also a draw for me. It's like, let's figure out what's happening over here. Mm-hmm. Both in this gacha space and in just a different culture that I'm used to playing RPGs from. The big appeal, so X Astris, it drops a lot of systems out of you up front, and I dropped it when I first tried playing it because of that. But basically, right past the point where I stopped playing, it doesn't introduce any more systems. Like, because I'd seen everything, and I was basically out of tutorial mode. But I thought there was going to be like three more hours of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got my head around it because it's the combat is built around making combos with your characters, and it's going to get a little systems-y. But like you have three characters in your party. They're instanced sort of turn-based battles. But where you attack and a character attacks, and let's say all of your attacks, you set up what order your characters do which of their skills in. There's no base attack. There's just skills, and all the skills do different things, and all the characters have different little systems attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
So like I can do an attack that is a downed strike, or downing strike. I don't know. I'll lower it something. It knocks an enemy over, and that takes up one of the MP, the AP I have for that turn. Then if I do this other attack, where it's a specific kind of like downing strike or something, if they hit an enemy if they just hit an enemy, it just does damage. But if they hit an enemy while they're knocked down, then it gives an AP back. So you get to do more attacks that round. And then there's attacks that will smash an enemy down and then launch them into the air. And then you have a certain amount of time to tap the attack to do aerial attacks that only hit enemies while they're up in the air. And if they do, then you get an AP back. So you build you build fighting game combos.
Yeah.
Xenoblade combos.
Oh, okay.
Couple launch smash.
It feels much better than Xenoblade to me.
Probably. Yeah.
I think the fighting game vocabulary feels a little clearer to me in X Astris.
Yeah.
And so it's not deep, because in practice what you do is you spend like 10 minutes in the menu fiddling with the different combos, and then you go into the fight, you figure out the execution over fights, and then you just do that combo basically every time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes enemies have different weaknesses, and you can kind of tweak your combo to try to take advantage of that. So there's like some thought to it. But generally, it's just you figure out how to execute, you do it every time, and then there's not that many fights because it's a 15-hour game and there's a lot of like poking around areas. So it there's not enough fighting for it to feel monotonous to me so far.
Sure.
And of course, when the enemies attack you, you can parry them to avoid all damage.
Of course you better be able to!
So it's pretty easy because like I figured out the combo. I was a little overwhelmed. Then I figured out the combos, and then I just parry the enemies. The parries were really easy for the first like chunk, but then the first major boss, which is really cool, starts doing like he attacks, you parry, and then he does a different attack with a different timing, and then does another attack, and then does another. So you have to figure out, you know, you have to Daigo parry the bosses. and that feels good when you when you start learning that. That actually feels. The other things that I like about it, the writing is really understated. There's not that much like cutscene, or the characters will like have incidental dialogue between each other. But there's a lot of care and thought put into the crafting of the world. But without going overboard and like info, like I played Tales of Berseria earlier this year, and that game is constantly terrified that you're going to miss anything.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah.
So you have all these skits, you have everything. It's extremely written. Like you're everything is spelled out for you crystal clear. And they put a lot of thought into their world, and then they're they really want you to make sure you notice it. And X Asterisk isn't like that. I think I would associate it more with something like Xenon, where there's cutscenes. It's less cutscene-y. But the cutscenes that are there kind of have that similar tone to me, where you are they're just trusting you. You're an adult consuming a piece of science fiction, and they trust you to
put one and two together.
Yeah, exactly. And at first I was like, oh, this is just convoluted RPG bullshit where they're throwing all these proper nouns at me. But like, as I played it, it's like, no, I'm get all the important stuff. Like, I actually liked this vibe. I liked Ancillary Justice. I liked Nine Fox Gambit. I like it. I like this kind of writing. It's not over. It's not. There's a lot of like the music is very ambient and pretty. The character designs are not over the top in how horny they are. Like High Impact, everybody was in Evangelion plug suits, and I was like, this is great. It's a lot. And this one is just much more understated. And I'm just like, this, the vibes here are just impeccable. I just feel great about it. I'm just enjoying this. The instead of a big open world, you just, all of the big acts take place in like these pretty 3D diorama worlds. A little more like early 3D, where it's a big space, but it's not an open world game. You're exploring a space closely. Like maybe like half the size of like a Xenoblade area. And then you're there for, you know, a third of it. And that agrees with me. I like that kind of exploration. All in all, it just feels like the pacing reminds me like an indie game. Kind of makes me want to go and play 1000 Resist. Parts of it make me think of like Fez's vibes for some reason.
Yeah, that's kind of like, just hearing you kind of explain a bit more, is like, kind of Fez-y.
It's a little bit, especially with the ambient music.
Yeah.
So I don't know how it's going to play out. If the finale lands for me, I'm going to feel really pleased and satisfied. It's just a nice,
a good phone game again, for once.
Yeah, a good fucking phone game. It would obviously, because it's only on phones. It would obviously work just fine on consoles. It takes a full minute to start up every time, so it doesn't actually work great on phones.
That's always a great feeling.
Yeah,
goes you back to like the Unreal Engine 4 days, where every game had to spend at least a minute and a half loading just at the beginning.
No, yeah,
I really wonder why there isn't a PC version of this.
I couldn't tell you. But boy, they sure are launching 3D Arknights open world game.
They're doing an Arknights thing. Yep.
In August. Looks very similar to this.
Sounds like this may have been some kind of test bed.
Fucking great. So I don't know. I hold anti-gacha principles pretty strongly.
Sure.
But they did the thing that any of these people could have done to pull me in, which is just make a good normal game.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, wait, you don't have any more of those?
You only have
the gacha? Fuck.
This game's not going to make $100 million in its opening weekend.
And probably jumping back into something gotcha related was also just about being sad.
Yeah.
So I'll see. Maybe I'll feel better after I finish X Astros, and I won't feel tempted.
Sure.
We'll see if I talk about Arknights sometime. I'm sorry for not sticking to my principles.
I'm sorry in advance.
But you know, my number one principle is fucking do what I want.
Bam. Look at
if
you.
I want to play Arknights.
Look at this guy.
I can't control that.
Look at this guy. Just
my
being
body wants to play Arknights. It wants to play Arknights.
Just being an adult over here. What the hell is this shit?
God. So that's been my big arc, is I played some itch games. And I played again the polar opposite of an itch game.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least it is completely unzeitgeisty, because literally sure. Not a single friend you've heard
of this. Literally nobody's heard it. But at least we can say that your Kirby era is over. Right?
It's I wasn't in a Kirby era.
You were in a Kirby era. We talked about this after the show last time, and
no.
The consensus was come to by everybody that knows you that yes, it was in fact a Kirby era.
Like Kirby. I beat the True Arena since last time.
There you go.
Yeah.
Still in
simply. Yeah. True Arena's real good, Rhett. You can do that, right?
I'll give it a shot.
It's gonna take more than a shot, Rhett. It's gonna take at least three.
They don't call him three shot Rhett every day for nothing.
I think that the combat or just the movement in Return to Dreamland Deluxe does feel tight enough to do something like that, where Forgotten Land being in 3D was a little more mushy and like harder to judge distance.
That makes sense.
The bosses were not like a huge standout.
Mm-hmm. There are chunks in Return to Dreamland where I'm like, I am playing it into Creates boss, and it felt real nice. So, yep, I think that's it for me.
All right. Well, I guess with all of that out of the way, we are going to wind things down. Thanks again for joining us. It's always a pleasure. But before we get out of here, John, why don't you tell the fine folks at home where they can find you on the interwebs?
Farawaytimes.itch.io or my website at farawaytimes.com. If you go to I was on a really neat thingamabobber. That's a very clean way of putting it.
Yeah.
I was on something called the Hidden Treasure Showcase. Fuck, what was it called? The Unearthed Treasure Room.
Mm-hmm.
With several other handful of game devs. Like Melis Hantani and liked it. I talked about Love Yourself, the Super Mario World hack. I really
that's
like.
That's a real good one.
Yep. God, I don't know where to link this. I'll post that to you, Polly, sure. And maybe we can.
Sure. We'll work that. It in but there somewhere.
There was just a ton of the Unearthed Treasure Room, and there were just a ton of cool picks in there. It was just a 40-minute show, and I finished it feeling completely in love with video games. Like, holy shit. There's so many bangers here. Oh my God. That was a delight. Games.
Awesome. Yep. Video games. Video games are awesome.
Awesome.
Somebody will get that. Rhett is probably the only one that will get that. Rhett, where can the internet folks at home find you?
Rhett.bsky.social. What else am I gonna say?
Finally he gives his real social media after all this time. We had a bit for a while, and now it's like, yeah, what, fine.
I gave my real analyst.
Yeah. Yeah.
I made a new one.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All right.
I was going to plug a Hololive stream, but then you said, where can they find me? And I thought, well, shit. I'm not on the Hololive stream.
No. No. You'll probably be there though.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's gonna do it. Until next time, thanks so much again for listening. And until we meet once again, we need you to remember that we are the podcast that loves you. We're the only ones that love you.